This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Market Talk for the month of April. In this programme, we'll be discussing the implications on markets of the latest tensions in the Middle East. We'll be asking where next for US interest rates in light of a strong US consumer and higher than expected inflation print. And we'll be breaking down the latest China GDP numbers announced earlier this week. So, hosting the call from the UK is me, Frances Watson, and in the investment hot seat, as usual, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Frances. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Now, weekend viewing on the television wasn't great, though, was it? I mean, heightened Middle East tensions there at the weekend. Coming back to the screens, though, the oil price didn't seem to react in the way I thought it might do, i.e. when it came slightly off its highs. How do investors price all these geopolitics in, Ben?
Yeah, it's impossible, really, because so many things are happening at once. And you're really, as you say, you see the appreciation in sort of risk-off proxies. So, you know, we've seen the dollar strengthen. That's often what happens when investors want to sort of look at risk off. Gold as well, being very strong. Oil, it's been moving around. It's still elevated, as you say, maybe directly the sort of 24 hours after hasn't been rallying tremendously, but it's been rallying all year. I think partly to do with specific oil factors, but I think also to do with the uncertainty around supply that could be implied by what's going on in the Middle East.
And of course, aside from geopolitics, Ben, last week we saw the US inflation print higher than expected and a really strong set of retail figures there from the US consumer. What were they, 0.7% versus 0.3% expectations?
It's been the case this year that we've seen reasonably strong US growth, and we've also seen inflation. Now, Jerome Powell in the last Fed meeting spoke about the inflation prints in January and February as being potentially, you know, explainable by the seasonality of people putting their prices up at the beginning of the year. But now we've had three in a row, and it's starting to look a little bit more like a pattern that inflation is sticky. And actually, just last night, I mean, we're talking on Wednesday, aren't we? So last night in the US, he made some comments to that effect, saying that, three is maybe looking like inflation's not coming down as fast as we thought. So yeah, the Fed is perhaps not quite as confident. And I think investors in general aren't quite as confident. So if you look at what's happened after that CPI print and also the decent economic growth that we've seen from retail sales, industrial production was pretty good as well. So now there's only 40 basis points of cuts priced into short-term rate markets. So 40 basis points. So normally the Fed would go 25 each cut. So actually fewer than two cuts now being priced in. June was spoken about as the moment when the Fed would probably start cutting into, say, June the 12th. But now that's been priced down, pushing back to July, even September. And so far, it's not, we can talk about the market implications, but so far we're still talking about cuts. They're just being delayed, as opposed to maybe things are a bit too hot and the Fed might even need to hike. But so far, it's just fewer cuts rather than hikes. That's what we're all talking about.
Okay. But of course, there is divergence, isn't there, between the US and Europe, because there you've got a situation where inflation, let's not talk about the UK just yet, but inflation in Central Europe is falling quite nicely. And Lagarde has basically said, hasn't she, that June is ripe for a cut.
Yeah, and that's actually a difference, as you say, between the rhetoric of the two central banks. So Powell, like I said last night, was being a little bit more cautious about rate cuts, but Lagarde reiterated that, you know, they are getting close to being ready to cut interest rates, as you say, partly because inflation has, if anything, surprised on the downside in Europe, but also growth has been weaker. Real growth, at least, has been weaker in Europe. So I mentioned that there's 40 basis points of cuts priced for the Federal Reserve. There's 80 basis points for the ECB, the European Central Bank. And that And also June is still the one that people are talking about as likely. But I've said this quite a number of times on this podcast that central bankers are not particularly good at forecasting when they're going to be cutting interest rates or raising interest rates. And they're not particularly good at forecasting inflation, which seems a little bit, not great, given that that's partly their job. So who knows? Right now, the trend certainly for the US is to keep pushing back. And the ECB, if we were to get a couple of inflation prints that were higher than expected in the next couple of months, who knows, the ECB might also have to be pulling back. It's a long time between now and June, isn't it? But that, for now, is still the most likely month.
Okay, so let's go on to current thinking then, Ben. And where are we in terms of where we stand now, given all these events, given a very strong US economy, mounting geopolitical tensions? Where are we in terms of equities, credit and sovereign bonds?
Yeah, so the big impact has been on bond yields. So, yeah, we've seen, and the two things that I look at most eagerly, I guess, in trying to work out how the impact of these tightening conditions are, is the real yield in the US. So that's the government bond yield minus the sort of implied inflation. And I also look at the dollar, the price of the dollar, because those two things are hugely important for borrowers. So if you want to borrow dollars, of course, you're exposed to the dollar going up in value, then the thing that you've borrowed is worth more. That's not good for you. And also the real yield, the lending rate over and above inflation is incredibly important. So as we are talking now, so this is on Tuesday's close, 10-year US real yields, 2.24%. So that's 2.25%. Now, back when we were last quite worried that the Federal Reserve hadn't got control of inflation and that, you know, we were talking about no landing scenario, that back last October, if you remember, when, of course, the S&P was also weaker, that real yield was at 2.5%. So it's 2.25% now. It was 2.5% at the weakest point, at the highest point back in October. So, you know, it's moved a fair chunk, but it's got 0.25% to go. The dollar, and I'm taking here the DXY index, which isn't the best dollar index, but it is an index. That right now is 106.3, and it was back in October 107. So it was, like a percent, a little less than a percent higher. So we're quite close on the dollar basis to being back where we were last October. But we're a little bit further away on the real yields. Now, credit markets and credit investors and equity investors have been remarkably calm about that move higher in real yields. That there has been, of course, some weakness in recent days to do with the geopolitics. But in more broad terms, in terms of that tightening real yields, we haven't actually seen a big move in credit spreads. So since the start of the year, actually, investment grade dollar credit spreads are 6 basis points tighter. These are the Bloomberg indices that I'm looking at. High yield, also 4 basis points tighter. So this year, we've seen higher real yields, stronger dollar, squeezing credit conditions, and actually credit spreads are a little bit tighter. And the S&P 500 is also higher over the year. So yeah, there's been a little bit of weakness just recently, but not a huge amount. But I do think that if we continue to see real yields go up, and if we see the Fed move from delaying rate cuts to talking about rate hikes, then I think that changes. That whole dynamic changes. And we
the
could
whole
see
dynamic
a fair,
changes.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah. So there has been resilience, hasn't there, in credit? And as you say, a little bit of softness in equities, really. But, you know, how long can that last is the big question on everyone's lips, I suppose, isn't it? And of course, you mentioned the stronger dollar there, and the stronger dollar versus things like the Japanese yen that has been, can you say, hitting new lows? I suppose you can. And other Asian currencies. And that makes the whole dynamics of rate cutting in those areas really, really difficult too, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's when the US is having to hike interest rates and squeeze markets, like I said, these funding conditions, the problem that every other central bank faces is that their currency to the dollar is weakening. And you mentioned the Japanese yen. I mean, I'm looking at the Korean won has been weaker. The Indonesian rupiah, all of these currencies are weaker. And for a central bank in Asia, particularly emerging market Asia, so more like, let's say, Indonesia, you know, the central bank are very, very concerned about the price of things that they are importing, food, energy. A lot of things are denominated in dollars. And then if your currency is weakening versus that dollar, then your population has got to spend an awful lot more money on those imports. And from their perspective, they are very reluctant to cut interest rates because that encourages the currency from falling even more, because then more money would flow to the higher yields that you can get in the dollar. So it really constrains central banks, who were all hoping at this point that the Federal Reserve would be very close to cutting interest rates, and that would release their pressure. They would be able to cut interest rates. They'd be able to just encourage a little bit more growth, not worry about their local currency. But right now, it's totally the opposite dynamic, which, again, is another reason why you should be worried as an investor at this stage, because central banks are having to keep monetary policy tighter than they would otherwise want, which ultimately should lead to weaker growth. You know, higher interest rates locally across lots of central banks would be constraining growth. And ultimately then growth feeds into things like earnings, feeds into things like credit quality. So it's another reason, if this continues and these central banks are continually constrained by the strength in the real yield, the dollar, as we said before, this whole strength, the dynamic of credit markets, equity markets, almost ignoring what's going on, I think that could change.
Okay, that's a really interesting summary. Thanks, Ben, for that. So look, let's turn out to the current week and what's on the financial horizon. And we talk about, you know, the worries over future growth, but of course we've just had the Q1 GDP China numbers. Makeup, well, you tell us, was it encouraging or not?
It was a little bit encouraging, yeah. I think so. China has domestically is still relatively weak. I think property sector is still weak. Retail sales are not particularly good, but they are benefiting from the strength of the U.S. economy. I mean, that's, as we said, one of the reasons why yields are going up is because actually retail sales in the U.S. are fine, industrial production is fine, and other parts of the world are also, the economy is doing okay, and as a result, Chinese export sector has done okay. There's manufacturing investment that they're making for exports, and we'll see later this year if that's if that export sector is facing headwinds from, you know, potential political changes. That's another podcast, isn't it? So from tariffs and all that sort of business. But right now they're doing okay. So that actually led to GDP beating expectations in the first quarter. That was a nice thing to see. Although it does look sequentially as though January, February was quite strong, March a little bit weaker. So still questions about the momentum going forward. And as I said before, the central bank, China's Chinese central bank, is also constrained, I think, by the US, the Federal Reserve, not cutting. I think Chinese monetary policy, if there were perfect conditions in the world, they would probably be cutting interest rates, loosening monetary policy to support the local consumer. But they can't do that right now as much as they want because of the higher US yields and the threat that it poses to the currency. So they're just one of these central banks that wish they could be a little bit more supportive than they are.
Yeah, it's all so interlinked at the moment. Well, I suppose, yep, it always is, but now more than ever, it seems. All right, we'll look from China to the UK. And we've just had out this morning, in fact, UK inflation numbers, which are still looking sticky. I mean, service inflation in this country, in the UK, it is too high for my liking, Ben. What does that mean in terms of Andrew Bailey's thoughts for a rate cut in August, do you think?
Yeah, so we think our base case is that Bank of England will cut twice, August and November. Again, though, that's been pushed back because of, I guess, slightly sticky inflation, because of what the Federal Reserve is doing. So again, going back to what I said before, 40 basis points for the Fed, 80 for the ECB. The Bank of England is about 40 basis points, so more like the Fed in terms of rate cuts. It's not just the inflation numbers that have been a little bit higher than expected. There was also a credit conditions survey, so the banks sort of saying, how easy is it to borrow money in the UK? And that had eased as well. So they're saying that the borrowing conditions are easier than they had been. When we were all worried about recession last year, that was quite tight borrowing conditions, but they've eased a little bit. So again, maybe that means the Bank of England doesn't need to cut so much. So it really is a global phenomenon, all these banks, central banks, delaying their rate cuts, but all of them still hoping to cut rates. That's the key.
Okay. And should we just have a final word on the Q1 earnings season? Because, of course, we kick off, I think, in earnest on Friday. I saw Goldman Sachs had got some good numbers there. But we start off with the banks on Friday and then we go on. So maybe just us through the earnings expectations, Ben, there for Q1.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a few, as you say, headlined. It's always headlined by the big US banks on last Friday. And we've had a couple this week as well. As always, the beats are outnumbering the misses. I think early doors, it's 9-1 to the beats versus the misses on a ratio basis. But that sort of, the beats always seem to win out. The overall earnings growth for the S&P 500, the US index, is 2.5%. That's the expectations as per my Reuters screen. So, you know, still growth versus the same quarter last year, Q1 on Q1. And as I mentioned, unless there's a recession, which there isn't a recession at the minute, unless there's a recession, the companies always beat the expectations. So it'll probably be about 5% growth or so. So that's totally fine. Another reason, to be fair, why equities have been okay this year. When you look at the companies, they're benefiting from the strength of the economy. They're still posting decent numbers. And of course, you know, we talk about the Magnificent Seven really driving some of that strong performance as well. So for now, that's the focus. It's the earnings, it's the growth, not worrying yet about the tightening financial conditions. That's what's winning out.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? All right. So all that brings us on nicely, Ben, to the number of the month. We've only sadly got one market talk this month for April, but back again, of course, in May with the regular two. But so what's the number of the month and why?
So I was going to go back to what I was talking about before in terms of October last year being a point when we were worried about tightening financial conditions. So I'm almost thinking about the worst case scenario now for if we were to revisit that worry. And the number is 18.5, minus 18.5, because the S&P 500 was 18.5% lower at its weakest point in October, the 27th of October, compared to where it closed yesterday. So I'm not saying that the S&P will fall 18.5%, because over the last few months, since October, you know, we've had earnings, we've had dividends, you know, the S&P is a nominal index, financial index. So it probably won't go down that much, but it just shows you the amount that we have rallied since that point, since the relief, you know, the Fed pivot, they're talking about dovish policy. So there is some potential downside risk if we return, if we start to talk a little bit more about financial conditions tightening and start to worry a little bit more about that.
Yeah, as you say, I mean, a lot has been priced in over that strong rally, hasn't it? And I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, Ben, what we do know is, as I say, you're back with us in May, times two, and great to talk to you. As always, thanks for your insights. And thanks to all our listeners for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the License Corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.